This episode touches on topics of violence, sexual assault, and murder against children. Listener discretion is advised.
On a warm summer day in July of 2012, 10-year-old Lyric Cook Morrissey and her cousin, 8-year-old Elizabeth Collins, would head out in the town of Evansdale, Iowa, on what was supposed to be a typical bike ride. However, as the time the girls should have been home would come and go, Lyric and Elizabeth's grandmother and parents would become increasingly concerned. After the family would fail to locate the girls, police would be contacted and a massive search would begin. Eventually, Lyric and Elizabeth's bikes would be found on a trail at Myers Lake on the south side of town. Relentless search efforts would focus on the lake and nearby areas. However, it wouldn't be until the following November that their horrific fate would be discovered. This is Midwest Mystery Files, Episode 31, The Murder of Lyric Cook Morrissey and Elizabeth Collins.
Hey friends, I'm Katie.
And I'm Emily.
And we're the hosts of Malice
and Mocktails,
a true crime podcast. We are just two sisters covering cases of both vintage and contemporary true crime. And because true crime can be a bit of a bummer, at the end of every episode, we share with you some of our favorite mocktail recipes. Join us every week, wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time,
make good choices.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Midwest Mystery Files. I'm your host, Jeremiah, with just a few quick things before we start. Midwest Mystery Files is a true crime podcast focused on missing and murdered cases within the Midwestern region of the United States. I can be found on all major podcast platforms, as well as on YouTube with delayed episodes. Social media and contact info will be listed at the end of the episode. If you wish to support the podcast and help fund article and record searches, as well as get early access to episodes and bonus episodes, I encourage you to check out my Patreon at www.patreon.com/Midwest Mystery Files. I would also like to take this moment to thank my amazing patrons, Laura, Todd, and Teresa. One other quick thing that I want to note before we start is that I had initially wanted to record this about 5 days ago, but I spent my Labor Day weekend sick, and I'm still kind of on the up and up. My voice is doing much better, but I do manage to get some congestion now and then, as well as some scratchiness in the throat, so we're going to try this today. Hopefully it works out, and hopefully we can get through this without any complications. So, without further ado, on to today's case. In northeastern Iowa, on the outskirts of the much larger Waterloo, sits the town of Evansdale, a small town with a modest population of around 4,500 people. It's a typical little town, boasting a school system, a downtown, and parks for the kids to play. And while it's a smaller community, it does sit on the junction of Highways 218 and 380, making it easier to get to the many nearby metropolitan areas. All in all, it's a quiet, unassuming town, where you wouldn't expect much to happen. That would all change, though, in 2012, when two girls would come up missing, and their fate would lead to one of the most high-profile, unsolved cases in Iowa history. A case that still weighs heavily, not only on the citizens of Evansdale, but all those across the state as well. Lyric Ray Lynn Cook Morrissey was born October 2, 2001, in Waterloo, Iowa, to Dan and Misty Morrissey. Lyric was the younger of two children, having an older brother named Dylan, with whom she was very close with. She's described as having a passion for the outdoors, enjoying fishing with her father, as well as swimming and sledding. She also enjoyed playing cards with her grandmother and spending time with her cousins, coming up with dance and gymnastics routines. As far as cousins go, she was quite close with one in particular. Elizabeth June Marie Collins was born July 31st, 2003, in Waterloo, Iowa, to Drew and Heather Collins. Elizabeth was one of four children, with one brother, Kelly, and two sisters. Like most larger groups of children, one always has to take the lead, and it's often noted that Elizabeth loved playing with her siblings, and also loved ordering them around. Elizabeth is described as loving all that life had to offer, with a big heart and a large love for animals. She enjoyed being outside, riding her bike, as well as playing softball and hockey. She also loved dressing up and getting her hair and nails done. Lyric and Elizabeth were cousins who were related by their mothers, who were sisters. They were close in age and spent a lot of time playing with each other, at family functions, or when both were being watched by relatives. Both girls would grow up in the Evansdale and Waterloo areas. Lyric Cook Morrissey would attend elementary school at Kingsley Elementary School in Waterloo, where her family resided. However, both Lyric's parents would struggle with drug abuse and various related crimes. And while Lyric was living at home at the time of the events in this episode, she did spend quite a bit of time with other family, which included a lot of time in the town of Evansdale. Elizabeth Collins attended Poinier Elementary in Evansdale, while living a much stabler home life. Although, both girls would often find themselves both being watched by Wilma Cook, their grandmother, on plenty of occasions. Which was the case on a summer day in 2012, when Wilma was watching the two young girls at the Collins home in Evansdale. Friday, July 13th, 2012, was your average summer day, with temperatures hitting the high 70s and the low 80s by midday, and only a cloud or two in the sky. It was a perfect day for a bike ride, which is exactly what Lyric and Elizabeth had planned. According to reports, the girls headed out in the late morning and were last seen by Wilma Cook at approximately 12:15 in the area of Brovon Boulevard, where the Collins home was, in northwest Evansdale. We can only imagine what the two young girls laughed and spoke about on their ride around Evansdale. Was it their plans for the rest of the summer? Being excited for the incoming school year? Or maybe just the secrets and laughs that are shared between only the closest of cousins and friends? We'll never know for sure, but what is known is that after about an hour had passed, Wilma began to worry when the girls had not arrived home, as it was highly unusual for them to be gone that long. Once Misty Morrissey arrived at 2 p.m. to pick up Lyric, more panic began to set in. The two would begin to call family and friends and question around the neighborhood if anyone had seen either Lyric or Elizabeth. It would soon be discovered that between 12:30 and 1 p.m., the girls were seen on Gilbert Drive, about 1.5 miles south of the Collins home. They were also spotted on the 100 block of Lake Avenue, a road that runs perpendicular to the south of Gilbert Drive. At 2:48 p.m., police would be contacted. Lyric and Elizabeth would be reported missing, and a bigger search for the girls would begin. The Evansdale police would start the search and would quickly be aided by the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Department and members of the Evansdale Fire Department. Many would begin the search around the Collins home and fan out. The fire department would begin to check Myers Lake, which sat just to the east of Lake Avenue, where the girls were last seen, as well as the bike trail around the lake, which has an entrance on Arbutus Ave, just to the east of Lake Avenue. It's here that the first true sign of trouble would appear, when at approximately 4 p.m., firefighters would find the girls' bikes laying on the trail located at the southeast corner of Myers Lake. About 20 feet from the bikes was Elizabeth's purse. The girls, however, were nowhere to be found. At this juncture, all search efforts began to focus on Myers Lake and the surrounding areas. The search would go into the evening. By the morning of Saturday the 14th, when search efforts restarted, the search consisted of thousands of volunteers from the community as well as other areas of the state, as well as the Evansdale Police Department and the Black Hawk County Sheriff's Department. By Sunday the 15th, the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation and the FBI had become involved. Heather Collins and Misty Morrissey would express their concerns that the girls' bikes were found so far away, with Misty telling the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier on July 15th, quote, "I think they were taken. They usually don't go that far." And Heather Collins stating, quote, "They usually never leave the block." At this juncture, Evansdale Police and Fire Chief Kent Smock would note that it was only a missing persons case, not an abduction, although they weren't ruling anything out. He would tell the Courier on July 15th, quote, "We're concerned, absolutely, because of the length of time. We know it's out of character for these girls to wander off, because we don't know what happened, and it's been hours since we've last seen them. We're not taking this lightly." Over the next several days, volunteers, numbering into the thousands, as well as emergency services, would battle extreme heat into the 90s and comb every inch of the Myers Lake area and beyond. Searches would commence at nearby Deerwood Park, in cornfields surrounding the town, and on the banks of the nearby Cedar River. Police would contact and interview all known sex offenders in the area. Residential and business trash would be set aside after being picked up. The landfills would be searched, and the lake would be dragged, searched by divers, and even drained. Canine units would be utilized as well as air searches, but all to no avail. Elizabeth Collins and Lyric Cook Morrissey were nowhere to be found. On July 20th, 2012, after all searches of Myers Lake had been exhausted, and Lyric and Elizabeth were confirmed not to have drowned, their case was officially classified as an abduction. It was around this time that reports of great scrutiny around Misty and Dan Morrissey, the parents of Lyric Cook Morrissey, began to arise. Both individuals had past and current issues with drug abuse and related criminal cases. In 2003, Misty had pleaded guilty to conspiracy to manufacture and distribute methamphetamine. The day before the girls' disappearance, the courts had set a date in September for Dan Morrissey in connection with charges that police had found items used to make meth in his home in December. He also had a pending domestic abuse charge from the previous August alleging he had assaulted his wife, Misty. The day of Lyric and Elizabeth's disappearance, one of Dan's accomplices had a pretrial conference, with another accomplice having a hearing scheduled for several days later. During the course of the investigation, Dan and Misty, under the advisement of their attorney, did stop cooperating with investigators for a short time. All this would lead some to speculate that the girl's disappearance was in connection to either Dan's case or some other connection to the people that Dan and Misty associated with. On this, Misty would tell the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier on July 19th, 2012, quote, "There is a history in our family, but it is not one that we are scared of. It is one we have dealt with in the past, and we've come past it as family." She would continue on to state, quote, "Look into it all you want. Scrutinize it all you want. And then let's get back to what the real focus is. That's our girls. Because ultimately, no matter how much you look into us, we are completely open. It's not going to lead anywhere." In the same article, Wilma Cook would note that police had interviewed Dan and alleged that it was not a calm interview, stating, quote, "They screamed and yelled at him and accused him of killing the kids." She would go on to explain that Dan was at his mother's house with his son the day that the girls disappeared, and that he was there until Misty had called him to let him know the girls were missing. Shortly after the reclassification of the case to an abduction, Misty Morrissey would submit to a polygraph test. The results of that test have not been officially commented on by police, but Misty has expressed that the tests, quote, rule her out. Blackhawk County Chief Deputy Rick Abbin would tell the Courier on July 21st, 2012, that the Morrissey's background had been looked into, and despite their history, no one set of parents were being targeted over the other. He would state, quote, now that it is an abduction, everyone is a suspect until we find these people, these two young girls. We look at everybody, just not one set of parents over the other. Everything has to be considered. Much speculation would be centered around the circumstances of an abduction, drug-related or otherwise, as two children being abducted tends to be a rarity. David Finkelohr of the Crimes Against Children Research Center at the University of New Hampshire would tell the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on July 25, 2012, that cases of double abduction by a stranger were rare, since it would be hard for one person to control both, which does make the common motive of sexual gratification less likely than usual, and based off that, the drug angle was at least worth looking into. Making it more of a mystery was the fact the girls were known to never ride that far or go to the lake. Grandmother Wilma Cook would tell the Telegraph Herald, quote, the girls never rode that far. Never. It was in a two-block area. That's it. They always return, like I told them. July 31st, Elizabeth Collins' 9th birthday would come, with no sign of the girls. As time continued on, the heat would do little to slow down the hotter desire of family and friends to locate Lyric and Elizabeth. As resources from outside agencies began to dwindle, the parents would keep their intensity alive. Heather Collins would be a mainstay at the Iowa Department of Criminal Investigations booth at the Iowa State Fair, where information and pictures of the girls were made readily available. Both Heather and Misty Morrissey would take pleas to John Walsh for involvement from America's Most Wanted. And from what I can find, AMW did air a very short segment on the girls. The hard work and determination, however, would unfortunately come with little results. The hot summer would soon give way into the coolness of fall. School would begin with two empty seats. October 2nd, Lyric Cook Morrissey's 11th birthday would come, serving as an impressive reminder that the girls had yet to come home. In November of 2012, Lyric and Elizabeth's parents would take to the media, choosing to speak to the abductor of their daughters directly. They would post a letter in the November 13, 2012 edition of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier. That letter reads as follows. To whom it may concern, we would use your name, but we don't know who you are. Or maybe we do. Maybe you are someone who knows the girls. Maybe you are someone who just acted upon impulse. Maybe you plan to take them. We don't know, because we don't know who you are. But we can sort of imagine that you must not have had the things you needed to grow up, feeling safe and loved. Because only someone who hurts inside would hurt another person and their family. We've all heard the saying, hurt people hurt people. We believe that is true. We are so sorry for whatever happened to you when you were growing up. Certainly, all children do not receive all the love and care they deserve. Some are even abused by those who were supposed to have taken care of them. When that happens, it is very wrong. Taking the girls from us has caused much pain. Pain for them, pain for us and our families. Since the time you took them, maybe you've wondered more than a few times
how you could ever make it right. How to be a hero. Not a monster. Things probably look pretty hopeless for a good outcome. We want you to know that we are praying for you to do the right thing. By releasing the girls, everyone wins. Even you. The person who took them. Imagine how it will feel to have everyone remember that you were the one person in all the missing children cases. The one person who cared enough to let the girls go. You will not be remembered as the one who took the girls, but as the ones who let them come home. Our lives have not been the same since July 13th. Please, let our girls come home to us. Sincerely, Drew and Heather Collins, Dan and Misty Morrissey Cook. Several weeks would pass after the publishing of the heartfelt letter. Then, as the cold winds of December would set in, everyone's worst fears would be realized. On December 5th, 2012, two hunters were walking in a remote area of the Seven Bridges Wildlife Area in Bremer County, 20 miles north of Myers Lake, when they came across two deceased bodies. The bodies were sent to the state medical examiner for positive identification. But in a December 7th, 2012 news conference, Black Hawk County Chief Deputy Rick Abbott would express confidence that they were most likely Lyric and Elizabeth, as they were the only missing person cases in the state that came close to the description of the bodies found. On December 10th, it was confirmed and announced that the two bodies found belonged to Lyric Cook Morrissey and Elizabeth Collins. Police would release little in the way of details, such as the exact spot at Seven Bridges the girls were found at, or any manner of how the girls were killed, other than stating it was a homicide. The parents of the girls would stay out of the media at the time and ask for privacy. However, Elizabeth Collins' mother, Heather Collins, would take to social media and post the following. Quote, "We have been so blessed by the outpouring of all the prayers and support tonight with the gut-wrenching news that my beautiful daughter and my niece's bodies were found by hunters. This was not the outcome we wanted, but we know that they are up in heaven with our Savior, and our nightmare of where they are and what is happening to them has been answered." Following their discovery, memorial services would be held for the girls in Waterloo, and they would be laid to rest at the Waterloo Memorial Cemetery. Hundreds would attend both memorials. Investigators would remain quiet about circumstances surrounding the girls' death, as well as evidence found at the scene and where they believe the murder actually occurred. But it wouldn't be long before a potential suspect would temporarily come to light. On May 20th, 2012, in the town of Dayton, Iowa, about 107 miles west of Evansdale, 12-year-old Desi Hughes and 15-year-old Catherine Shepard, who lived across the street from one another, were both walking home from the bus stop and were both lured into a red pickup truck. That truck was driven by 42-year-old Michael Klunder, a man who had previously spent 19 years in prison for kidnapping and assault. According to Desi, Klunder got them into the truck, then took them to a local hog confinement that he was employed at. Upon arriving, Klunder began to restrain the girls and take them inside the building, one at a time. While Klunder was taking Catherine in, Desi was able to break free and escape the truck, running to safety and reporting what had happened. Once police arrived at the hog confinement, they would find Klunder dead in his truck. Being the true piece of trash coward he was, he had taken his life, rather than face any sort of consequences for his actions. Worse yet, authorities were unable to locate Catherine Shepard anywhere on the property. Her tragic fate would be unveiled 3 weeks later, when her body was found 20 miles away from the hog confinement in the Des Moines River. Hey guys, sorry for the weird interruption. I just want to clarify that that was May of 2013, not 2012. I just wanted to clear up any confusion that might be there. I didn't catch it until I was listening through and editing. So I just wanted to clarify that. Anyway, sorry for the interruption, and back to the actual episode.
Upon learning about Klender and his history, investigators began to look at him as a potential suspect in the murder of Lyric, Cook, Morrissey, and Elizabeth Collins due to several similarities in the cases. Mainly that Klender's victims were two young girls, and seeing as how double abductions by strangers are exceedingly rare, it was easy to see that he might have struck before the Dayton kidnapping in Evansdale. With hope that their murderer had been found, investigators would spend a good amount of time looking into Klender. However, in 2014, after an exhaustive investigation, it would be determined that Klender did not kill Lyric and Elizabeth and was ruled out as a suspect. To this, Evansdale Police Chief Kent Smock would tell the Des Moines Register, quote, "I think people were kind of hoping this would be the end of it. Ruling him out, that means the person is still out there. We never closed the door fully, but we're very comfortable saying we're no longer interested in looking at him." In June of 2013, police would release a new tip focusing on a large, white, older model, full-size SUV, possibly a Ford Bronco or Chevy Suburban, that was spotted by several witnesses near the crime scene at Myers Lake between 11:30 and 12:30 p.m. on the day the girls went missing. Reportedly, three different witnesses had seen this vehicle on Arbutus Avenue at around the time the girls went missing. Lake Avenue, where the girls were last seen, runs into a T at Arbutus Avenue. The girls would have had to ride east on Arbutus Ave to reach the trailhead for the bike trail around the lake. Two of the witnesses had reported seeing the vehicle near the trailhead when Lyric and Elizabeth first disappeared. A third witness, who would come forward a year later, would note that they saw the vehicle closer to the lake on Arbutus Avenue, next to a wooded area that was close to where the girls' bikes were found. There was some talk of the SUV in the media early on, but it was with the third witness's statement that police buckled down on the fact that it could very likely have been involved in the girls' abduction. When asked about this development, Drew Collins, Elizabeth Collins' father, would tell the media, quote, "We were hoping for more information, you know, something more than this vehicle description, but we were just always waiting for the day to find out what really happened." Upon the heels of determining that Michael Klender was not a strong suspect, investigators would work with the FBI's Behavioral Analysis Unit to create a suspect profile for the murderer. In August of 2014, the profile would be released to the public via a website dedicated to the girl's case, and it reads as follows. The suspect may have been experiencing stress related to legal troubles, spousal problems, employment difficulties, financial strain, or mental health issues in July of 2012. The suspect may avoid discussing the case or showing interest in the matter, but is likely following developments in the media. The offender may have attempted to abduct children or adults in the past. Following the disappearance, the suspect may have altered his or her physical appearance, such as changing hairstyle and facial hair. The offender's vehicle may have also been altered with a new paint job or reupholstery. The offender blends in and may be part of the Evansdale, Bremer, or surrounding communities. It is unlikely that the offender is a transient or someone who is merely traveling or passing through the area. The suspect likely used quiet coercion to gain the girls' compliance into leaving Myers Lake, using a ruse or threats of violence. Some of these points, such as the culprit possibly being known to the girls, would again bring scrutiny from the community onto the parents of Lyric Cook Morrissey. Misty Morrissey, who would now be going as Misty Cook following divorce, would be sentenced in 2014 to 10 years for drug offenses
but would be released a year later. Dan Morrissey, who had attracted most attention and scrutiny based on his connections, was sentenced in 2013 to 90 years in prison from his charges. Despite the suspicion and accusations, proof of any connection would fail to rear its head. Piggybacking off the suspect profile and the likelihood that the culprit knew the area, investigators announced in 2015 that strong focus was being put on the Seven Bridges Wildlife Area in Bremer County, where the girls were found, specifically on those who frequented the park. Evansdale Chief of Police Kent Smock would speak at a news conference February of that year, stating, quote, "I think you will all agree with me that Seven Bridges is extremely remote. We have no doubt that the person or persons responsible with this crime are very familiar with Seven Bridges. It is a very well-known area to the local community. Unless you just knew that area, you wouldn't just come across it. Obviously, whoever took the girls to that area was comfortable with that environment and knew of that environment. We know there are hundreds or thousands or however many people that have been to Seven Bridges. We want to eliminate everyone we can from that pool. We don't want to tarnish anyone's reputation. We're going to be very careful. We're not going to release those names." Smock would be asked if potential suspects had been identified. He would note that his department had strong theories about what had happened, but there was not a concrete suspect, stating, quote, "I wouldn't use the word suspect, or even persons of interest. There have been a multitude of people we have watched. Do we have a person who we are definitely targeting? No. Our hope is tomorrow that this case is solved. I have little doubt that eventually this case will be solved. I truly believe we're waiting for one phone call. Once that final bit of information comes in, we're going to be able to tie everything together." In November of 2016, 221 miles west of Evansdale, near the Nebraska border in Onawa, Iowa, two young girls would come running into their mother's home after school and inform her that a man in a silver car had tried to lure them with money to come with him. A neighbor of the girls, as well as two family members, began to pursue a silver 2004 Ford Focus, managing to stay on the vehicle until police could pull it over. That vehicle was being driven by 58-year-old Jeff Altmeyer of Ankeny, Iowa, who would admit to trying to entice the younger of the two girls. Upon Altmeyer's arrest, he would be connected to 19 other incidents across the state of Iowa between May of 2016 and November of 2016, some of which did result in sexual assaults of two young girls. In a majority of the incidents, Altmeyer would try to entice the girls with $100 bills. Altmeyer would ultimately be convicted to life in prison. It, however, was believed that there could have been many more victims, and investigators began to look into him as a suspect in the murder of Lyric Cook Morrissey and Elizabeth Collins. When asked in 2017, investigators would decline to speak too much on a potential connection, with DCI agent Mike Rorkas telling the Des Moines Register, quote, "Most I'll say about him is he's a lead. He's somebody we're definitely keeping an eye on." In 2017, the mother of Lyric Cook Morrissey, Misty Cook, who had, since being released from prison in 2015, turned her life around and was living in St. Lucas, Iowa with a partner and a new young child, would speak to KCCI Channel 8 on the fifth anniversary of Lyric and Elizabeth's initial disappearance. She would tell KCCI, quote, "I am scared a lot because they have never caught who did this. And I fear for my little girl. I fear for myself. I fear for my family, and that this person is still out there, and that they know who we are, and we don't know who they are. We will continue to hold out hope and hold these little girls in our heart and pray that God will bring this person or people to justice." During the 5-year anniversary, it would be noted that no new solid leads had come about, but in the 5 years since the girl's death, 2 different individuals had confessed to the crimes. However, both individuals lacked the knowledge of specific details pertaining to the case and were ruled out as being reliable. I do just want to take a moment to point out that when investigators keep important details about a case from the public, this is, among other things, one of the reasons why. I can't fully understand why someone would make a false confession. It's most likely due to any varying degree of mental illness, but it's one of the many things that can ruin the integrity of an investigation if the person confessing knows things they shouldn't. I fully believe the majority of listeners and others in the true crime community understand the importance of keeping details under wraps. However, there is that unfortunate group of people who seem to think the public have a right to know, even when there is no real reason for them to. Anyway, I digress, and back to the case. In 2018, KWWL Channel 7 would speak with Dan Morrissey from prison. On the topic of his daughter, he would state, quote, "Oh, she'd still be smiling and loving everybody. She was just the type of girl that would just brighten up a room. She was just so wonderful, just to be around. So trusting and so loving. I have God first, and I just understand that I need to start to live and to be thankful for every moment that I had with her, and grateful for the opportunity to be able to raise her and to love her and to know who she is." Continuing on in the interview, he would also talk about his past and the belief that his history and connections were what led to Lyric and Elizabeth's demise. He would state, quote, "Yeah, it doesn't even make sense if you think about it and play it out, you know. Why would this happen? If I had any idea of somebody that was in my life that I owed money to or had threatened me or anything, you think I wouldn't know who that person is? You know what I mean? So I mean, that would be the number one suspect on the case, and this thing would have been solved a long time ago. But there is absolutely nobody in my life that I owe money to, or that I have told on, or anything like that. That has nothing to do with my daughter. And why would they abduct Elizabeth and my daughter at the same time, in another town that my daughter is not even from, on a random bike ride that nobody knew they were going to take? It doesn't make sense." In May of 2018, another tragic event would occur that would have investigators looking to Belle Plaine, Iowa, located just 46 miles to the south of Evansdale. In the early morning hours of May 4th, 2018, 36-year-old Teresa Catherine Girlman would step onto the Union Pacific Railroad tracks that ran through the town, and in what would later be ruled a murder-suicide, would pull her 8-year-old son, Henry Fields, onto the tracks and hold him in front of an oncoming train. Investigators would soon learn that Teresa's mental state had been deteriorating for months, and she had been on medication and seeing community support specialists at a local nonprofit. It was through one of these specialists that it was learned that Teresa Girlman was allegedly in possession of a 6-page letter written by the men who had murdered Elizabeth Collins and Lyric Cook Morrissey. A search warrant was executed on Teresa's home. According to reports on the warrant, investigators were looking for diaries, notations, computer entries, medication, letters, and cellular phones. According to a June 1, 2018 Cedar Rapids Gazette article, DCI Special Agent Mark Kropfel would tell the press that investigators had found the letter, but would go on to state, quote, "But it was information we already had." He would note that when taken in context with Girlman's mental state, authorities got no new leads from the letter, stating, quote, "It's old information is what it is." It would seem that whatever was in the letter, some of it was already known to investigators and had already been vetted as unreliable. At least that's what I get from this. It's unknown if any other information of note was found during the searches. In the 5 years since the Belle Plaine tip, there has been little other movement in the case from a public standpoint. In 2019, the Cedar Valley Crime Stoppers would offer an award for $50,000 for information that leads to an arrest in the case. In 2021, the reward was doubled to $100,000. In July of 2022, on the 10th anniversary of Lyric and Elizabeth's disappearance and murder, investigators would affirm that they were as dedicated as ever to bringing the girls justice. Scott Rieger, a special agent with the Iowa DCI, would tell the Des Moines Register in July of 2022, quote, "It's an active investigation. This case is not sitting on a shelf somewhere gathering dust. We have countless examples across our country of cases that everybody thought they were never going to figure out what happened. And time just has a way of fleshing a lot of these cases out. So that's how we're going to continue to approach this one." Rieger would also note that tips were still coming in, with 117 tips coming in the last 10 months alone to an email set up specifically for tips. That email will be listed at the end of the episode when I give out case contact information. Rieger would go on to tell the Register, quote, "It's kind of the natural trajectory of cases as they become more long-term. Information isn't coming in at the speed at which it did early on, but the information is still coming in." When investigators were asked if DNA could help solve the case, Bremer County Detective James Ellison would tell the Register, quote, "DNA technology, along with forensic genealogy and electronic forensics, have come a long way in the last 3 years or so. So it's an exciting time in law enforcement for agencies that have cases similar to this, where it's kind of that endurance investigation, and we're waiting for some technology or new information that'll help us push the case forward." The prospect of DNA hopefully moving the case forward would give Elizabeth Collins' father, Drew, a new glimmer of hope. He would tell the Register, quote, "I thought when they found the bodies that we'd have quick answers. But that being said, I do think time is definitely on our side. Technology is going to be on our side. Since 2012, the leaps in DNA technology are just huge. So hopefully something comes up, and they'll be able to use something that was left at the crime scene to match it with somebody else." Drew Collins would go on to add, quote, "She was a very sweet, happy, loving child. She loved her brother. She loved her sisters. She was very good to her family. She was always smiling. She was a good person, and she didn't deserve this." Heather Collins would also speak on the 10-year anniversary. Speaking about her daughter, she would tell KCRG Channel 9 that Elizabeth was an energetic girl who loved people, animals, and swimming. She would go on to state, quote, "She also loved the water. She was a water baby. She loved swimming. And any chance you know we could go swimming, we did. She loved people. She loved animals. If she could have every animal out there, she would have. Any animal she saw, she fell in love with. And they loved her. She loved nature. She loved being outside." Heather would also speak on the relationship between Lyric and Elizabeth, saying that the two girls acted like they were siblings more than cousins. She would recall fondly, "They fought like sisters over whatever, a toy or whatever it was." Like Drew Collins, she would also talk in the hopes that DNA could maybe help solve the case in the future, stating, quote, "Science changes all the time, so I just pray that they find them soon. That's my prayer, every day." She would end the interview choosing to speak directly to the person responsible for the murder of Lyric and Elizabeth. Quote, "What gave you the right to take my daughter and niece? What gave you the right? And how do you think that was okay to take someone else's child and kill them? They wrecked more lives than they would ever know. They didn't just wreck our families' lives. The community is different because of it."
Misty Cook would also speak to KCRG as part of the 10-year coverage, speaking on the speculation of drug involvement that persists to this day as the reason for the murder of the girls. Misty would clarify that she was open about her past right away, telling KCRG, quote, "This was maybe on, like, the second day, and we were doing the searches. There was a reporter there. I just went up and I was like, you know, I have a criminal history. And I just being really open about that because I'm sure that's going to come up because I do know how judgmental people will be. And I know how people think and operate. I knew that I didn't have anything to do with this, and my only desire was really just to put everything out on Front Street so that, you know what I mean, we could do our best at finding where these girls were." She would attest that she even went as far as contacting individuals that she had dealt drugs with in the past, stating, quote, "I told those people, I was like, hey, I let the cops know that we'd had interactions in the past, and they don't care about that. They just want to know as much information as they can to anything that could lead to finding them." During the interview, Misty would share her own theories and skepticism on the death of the girls and those responsible. According to Misty, her skepticism began when the girls were first found, and she was contacted by Evansdale Police Chief Kent Smock to ask about evidence and marks that could help identify Lyric. Misty would state, quote, "He asked me over the phone about a fingernail and what was Lyric's fingernail painted. She wasn't painted. If it was, it was super chipped. We'd been swimming all week." Misty would claim she had become more skeptical even after seeing the remains at a funeral home, and police told her a zebra stripe had been painted on one of the girls' fingernails. Misty would continue, quote, "I saw the zebra stripe on their fingernail. I just said, there's no way. I mean, there's absolutely no way that's her finger. Like, unless her and Elizabeth had stickers that they stuck on their fingers, she would never be able to paint that perfect of a stripe across her finger. I can't imagine that they did put stickers on their fingernails. I don't know for sure. So I don't know. I've really struggled with that." She would go on to state that further seeds of doubt were planted by the fact that police never released the details of the murders to the family, saying, quote, "I've never seen a police report. I've never seen a report saying that was her, how they identified that it was her, how she died, anything like that. Never seen anything. I'm not saying it wasn't. I'm just saying it's really hard to believe that when there's just nothing proving it to me." On her thoughts about who the culprit could be, she would state, quote, "I personally believed if it wasn't someone on the actual police force, or somebody in authority that's being covered up, then that person is probably dead. If it was a pedophile issue, then that person probably would have reoffended by now. If it wasn't that, then, you know, how does it get covered up for this long in such a small area?" Obviously, there's a lot going on here, and since these seem to be Misty's claims alone, I won't really be discussing them in theories. I was unsure of what to even include here, since she speaks very little on Lyric or Elizabeth as a person. However, I wanted to make sure that, seeing as this is where the case stands, even a year later, after the 10-year anniversary, that all parents' thoughts and views were represented. From what I could find, Dan Morrissey was not interviewed in any capacity. As far as Misty is concerned, when it comes to her not knowing the cause of death, I think it's important to note that in a December 11th, 2012 article from the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier and a report from KWWL Channel 7, the Collins stated they did not wish to know how the girls were murdered. It's possible investigators believe this extended to Cook and Morrissey as well, or there could be other investigative reasons. In June of 2023, Misty Cook and another individual were arrested on possession charges, which did include possession of methamphetamine. It's been 11 years since 10-year-old Lyric Cook Morrissey and 8-year-old Elizabeth Collins left on a bike ride and never came home, only to be found several months later, their lives taken from them. In that time, there's been various potential leads, lots of speculation and accusations, and a longing by everyone from parents, investigators, and the community at large to see the case solved and the girls receiving their long overdue justice. In the absence of definitive answers, several potential theories have been put forth, both by investigators and others. I'm not going to go over all of them. As I said, there has been a lot of speculation around this case, and I think it would be easy to get lost in a sea of what-ifs here. Instead, I just want to touch on a few of the main ones. Firstly, I would like to touch on Jeff Altmeyer and Michael Klunder. Klunder, who was responsible for the abduction of two young girls in Dayton, Iowa, in 2013, ultimately murdering one before taking his own life, certainly seems like a solid person to look at. Aside from his 2013 crime, he had a history of kidnapping and sexual assault, even spending time in jail for said crimes. Police would spend close to a year looking into Klunder before ruling him out as a suspect. Despite this, there are still people who think he is a viable suspect. To this, unless police eventually find that the killer is definitively someone else, there's no way to rule Klunder out for sure. And one thing does stand out, which is the fact that he did abduct two young girls at the same time, an extreme rarity in cases of stranger abductions, making the fact he could have done the same thing with Lyric and Elizabeth a bit more probable. The thing here, though, is that whoever murdered Lyric and Elizabeth was sure to take them to a remote area where they were likely to not be found for some time, if at all. And while the murderer may have known the area well, it would be hard to trace any one person to it out of the thousands that visit every year. In Klunder's case, he took the girls to the very place he worked at. Granted, it's unlikely he ever planned to leave the bodies there, as he did put Catherine Shepherd's body in the river, even when he planned to take his own life. So that was probably his plan of disposal all along. However, he did take the girls to a place that could very easily be traced back to him. All it would have taken is one witness to blow the whole thing open. And to me, at least, it doesn't show the same kind of care that the culprit in Evansdale took to not be caught. Jeff Altmeyer also seems like a very likely suspect. At the time that he was caught after attempting to abduct a young girl in Ottawa, he had already attempted to entice upwards of 19 girls, ages 6 to 13, across the state of Iowa, with two of those incidents ending in sexual assaults. Lyric and Elizabeth both fit that age range, and Altmeyer was known to travel all over the state, meaning he could have been familiar with both Evansdale and the Seven Bridges Wildlife Area, and he certainly could have attempted to entice the girls with money. Investigators have been hush-hush when it comes to Altmeyer, mostly confirming that he was someone being looked at, but not much has been said since then. This could mean they have something, but not enough to lead anywhere, or they could very well have nothing at all, but don't want to rule him out completely. Until more answers are found, we'll never truly know. The biggest factor against Altmeyer, at least for me, is that Lyric and Elizabeth were taken in 2012. Altmeyer's enticement spree occurred in 2016. Now, police have stated that he may have more victims they didn't know about, as that sort of escalation doesn't occur overnight. He would have most likely already been comfortable in what he was doing by 2016. However, to our knowledge, he never attempted to kill any of the girls. He only went as far as a sexual assault. I'm by no means a psychologist or a certified expert on killers, but from what I've always understood, generally culprits escalate in their actions, not revert. If he was stopping at assault in 2012 and killing in 2016, it would be one thing. And thank goodness he didn't kill any of the girls, but it seems strange that he wouldn't continue that behavior in his assaults in 2016 if he did indeed strike against Lyric and Elizabeth in 2012. Lastly, I want to talk about Dan Morrissey and his connection to the drug world. This has been a hot topic of accusation and speculation since the day Lyric and Elizabeth were first abducted. While it would appear that Dan Morrissey and Misty Cook were both accounted for and have alibis at the time of the disappearance, speculation has fallen to those associated with Dan, particularly those he was set to be convicted with. The belief, among many, has been that the girls were taken and murdered to force Dan to stay quiet. While this sounds like the plot to a thriller movie, it's not particularly outside the realm of possibility. The problem is, there's never been anything, at least that we know publicly, that really verifies this could be the case. Some people do point to the fact that the Morrisseys did go quiet for a short time at the advice of their lawyer. In times like these, a lot of people will take getting a lawyer as a sign of guilt, or having something to hide. However, as I've stated before in this podcast, and many others have as well, it's a good rule of thumb to not talk to the police without a lawyer, especially when there is a relatively good chance you could be looked at as a suspect. In fact, even if you know you're 100% innocent in the case that something happens to your child, but you do have a criminal background that investigators can use against you, it would be highly advisable to get a lawyer. Despite their sometimes shady reputations, they are there to protect you and your rights in this very sort of situation. As far as circumstances around the abduction, I admittedly have to agree with some points that Dan made in his 2018 interview. Lyric and Elizabeth went on a random bike ride on a random day in a town that the Morrisseys didn't actually live in. If someone with drug connections to Dan were looking to abduct Lyric, they would have had to wait outside her home, follow Lyric and her mom to another town, spend most of the morning camped outside the Collins house, something that would have drawn attention in that neighborhood, and then follow them across town before risking an abduction on a busy trail. Furthermore, someone trying to leverage a person's silence by abducting their target's daughter is already drawing attention to themselves. It seems unlikely they would want to abduct a second child and bring even more unwanted attention to themselves when it would be an unnecessary hassle. At least, I would think so. I don't want to give the drug theory any more attention than that, because as I've stated before, it's rooted heavily in speculation, but it's also too prominent in the narrative to ignore completely. If anything, I just thought I would lay out a few things about the theory that I thought were worth considering. Personally, to me, this truly feels like a crime of opportunity that was most likely committed by someone who, like the FBI profile suggests, was probably familiar with both the Evansdale and Seven Bridges wildlife area. They may have been recognizable to the girls as, like we talked about earlier, stranger abductions involving two victims are exceedingly rare due to the difficulty in handling both victims. Or they could have been a complete stranger who was able to, one way or another, get both girls from the trail and their bikes. Regardless of who is responsible, one thing is for certain. Lyric Cook Morrissey and Elizabeth Collins went on a bike ride and never came home. They set out to do something that multiple kids across America do, given on any warm July day, only to meet a horrific fate. 10-year-old Lyric, who loved One Direction, bowling, gymnastics, and being outdoors, no matter how abrasive the weather might be, a girl who loved her brother and loved her cousin like a sister. 8-year-old Elizabeth, a bright, rambunctious girl who loved her siblings and loved being social with kids her age, so much so that teachers would note that she was always the last one done with lunch because she was just so busy talking to everyone. She loved playing hockey just as much as she loved being a girly girl. They went out on a bike ride. They went out to have fun, but they didn't come home. They didn't come home because someone thought it was their right to take the girls from their life and from this world. In the aftermath, they not only took the girls' lives, they've put unsurmountable heartache on two families, the community, and beyond. Even to me, I feel like it was only weeks ago that I was seeing news reports of two young girls going missing. But it's been 11 years. Lyric should be 21 years old now. Elizabeth should be 19. In that 11 years, the town of Evansdale has done much to memorialize Lyric and Elizabeth. A child safety day has been implemented. There's a yearly memorial ride and drive.
and the Memorial Park was established at Myers Lake. But that's done little to alleviate the overall sorrow, loss, and anguish of two young girls being ripped from this world. However, after 11 years, investigators have not faltered. This case is by no means considered cold, and the drive and determination remains as strong as it did 11 years ago to bring justice to Lyric Cook Morrissey and Elizabeth Collins. To the person who did this, I know your day is coming. I want to leave us with a quote from Drew Collins from one of his 10-year anniversary interviews. Quote, "Every night when you close your eyes, you don't know if tonight's going to be the night that they knock on your door, but we're coming for you, and I'm not going to stop." If you have any information on the murder of Lyric Cook Morrissey and Elizabeth Collins, please call the Evansdale Police Tip Line at 319-232-6682 or Cedar Valley Crime Stoppers at 855-300-8477. You can also email tips to our missing Iowa girls at dps.state.ia.us. If you're looking for additional information, there is a plethora of articles and podcasts on Lyric and Elizabeth. For news, the Des Moines Register, the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier, KCRG-TV, and KWWO-TV has the most extensive coverage. I would also recommend checking out the Elizabeth Collins Foundation, a nonprofit dedicated to helping families of missing individuals and educating the community on prevention of abduction, sexual abuse, and trafficking. If you wish to let me know what you think happened, have case suggestions or comments, or just want to follow me and the other on social media, I can be found on Instagram at Midwest Mystery Files, Twitter or X at Files Midwest, and on Facebook by searching for Midwest Mystery Files. You can also email me at MidwestMysteryFilesPod@gmail.com. I do also post photos and sometimes links relevant to each case on social media, mainly on Facebook and Instagram. Lastly, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Good Pods, please feel free to rate and review the show. This helps make the show more visible in searches, and more importantly, helps bring attention to the cases I cover. Thank you to all who have done so already. Take care, everyone, and I will see you all next time.